This is Jared Ethan Black, Trouble in Paradise, Genesis, Episode 5.
We've finally gotten through two chapters of Genesis. I promised you roughly 10 weeks of it, and we've burned five of them within the first two chapters of our story, but they're very important. Anytime you set up a creation, it just takes some time. You have to understand what's going on. We've seen now the created elements prescribed by the Eastern way of thought. We had water, we had wind, we had land, and then finally last week we got to a pictorial array, if you remember my whiteboard, which I was really excited about, of fire. And fire shows up actually as this element inside of humanity. It's when Adam says, bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh, I'll call her Isha because she's come out of Ish. He's rooting his understanding of humanity in fire. And that fire is purposeful. It does something. It's moving. It's active. We talked about fire has the opportunity. It's rarefied and it's transient, meaning it's transitioning something from one state to another. And that's this human course that we're on. We're in the garden. This outlined paradise prescribed by God, but as we'll learn today, there's trouble in paradise, and it shows up between two trees. There's two trees that God, in creation, brings out of the ground. One is the tree of life, which is a very prominent type of symbol that you'll see in all sorts of literature. It's akin to the fountain of youth that you'll see in other mythologies. The idea of this tree of life was that it was to be continually eaten from. You're exposing yourself to that which is abundant. But there's this other tree, and for whatever reason, this seemed like a good idea to God. In fact, it was such a good idea to God, after he creates all of it, before there's trouble in paradise, God gives the double superlative. He says, this is tov, tov, which means very good. In Hebrew, when you want to say something very, you just say it twice. He says, this is good, good. Not just good, it's good, good. So it's very good. And a part of that very good creation was this other tree, right in the middle of the garden, presumably near this tree of life. It was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And that tree had a directive with it. These fire beings, these light beings, humanity, Adam and Eve, now that we learn their proper names, they're not to eat from one of the tree. Why? Well, they're not to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, according to God's instruction to Adam, because in the day that they eat of it, they will surely die. That's how it says it. So what is it about humanity, the Ha-Adam? What is it about humanity that is not intended within creation to eat, to take in from the tree of knowledge of good and evil? That seems like it would be a good idea, right? I mean, to be able to know good and evil presumably would mean that I could choose good over evil. I don't want you to miss this in the story, because this shows up through the entire trajectory of 66 books, through the entirety of the history of Christendom on the planet. We absolutely still get confused and trip up right here. It's as if we've never left the garden scene. Humans' innate ability to decide to eat from the wrong tree on a daily basis is our undoing. And the Bible would say, the scriptures would say, Genesis would point out that this is why, right here in chapter 3, this is why it happens. Because when Adam and Eve are given a choice, they've got the tree of life, and they've got the tree of knowledge of good and evil, they seem to make the mistake that then has infected all of humanity's ability to decide rightly or wrongly. Now here's how it works out. You see a serpent shows up, part of God's creation, by the way. A serpent shows up and begins talking to young Eve, fresh from the side of Adam, and Adam fresh from the ground from which he came. And the serpent says, did God really say that you shouldn't eat from all of the trees in the garden? And she goes, well, no, not really. What he said was, from the tree in the middle of the garden we shouldn't eat from. And the serpent, who is crafty, as it says, in fact, the craftiest of all the created beings, says, I mean, did God really say that you would die? Actually, what it is God knows that in the day you eat of it, you'll become like the gods, knowing good and evil. And so certainly the tree was pleasing to the eye and it looked good for food. And so Eve took it, ate it, and handed it to Adam, who was with her, as it says. He wasn't somewhere else. This was agreeable to them both. And so a bite of crisp fruit rings out in the morning mist. And we are left with disaster. This is Genesis's way of showing you the rooted problem in creation. I mean, it's just two naked people eating from a tree, right? On one hand, but on the other, like any good mythos, it tells you in an instant a foundational reality that influences us all. And it's right here. There's two trees in life. There's two trees. There still are only two trees. There's this tree of life. And then there's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now, you have to put yourself in a different place. Maybe it's possible these two humans decide for themselves, we're going to be really deviant. We're going to do something really bad, and it's going to feel good. That could have been it. But think about it this way. The temptation in the garden is just as likely, I would argue even more so. They get to decide for themselves what is right and wrong, good and evil. The Hebrew word there is tov, good, and ra, evil. It's the tree of tov and ra. I like to think of it as a forked tree. And you've got on the one side, you have this big, huge tree of branch of good. It's the good side of the dead tree. And then you've got the other side, of course, is ra, and it's the evil. It's that which is inappropriate. And in Hebrew, here's what you got to understand. The terms good and evil are not moral terms as we think of them. We think of good actions or a good little boy or a good little girl, and we think of someone who's moral. They don't do bad things on purpose. Well, in this account, good and evil are their relationship terms. So they're not necessarily moral terms, like you do the right thing because it's virtuous. They're relationship terms, meaning that when you do something that is good, you've done it out of proper relationship. So I can be good to my iPhone by using it, utilizing it in the way in which it was intended. I can be raw to my iPhone by using it as a surrogate ball in a baseball game. I can throw it, you can hit it with a bat. And what will that do to my poor iPhone? It'll break it. It'll render it useless for that which it was created. Do you see that? Tov and Ra are relational terms. When something is Tov, it means it's in proper relationship. It fits together properly. If something is Ra, it doesn't fit the way it was intended to. It doesn't relate the way that it's supposed to. So Tov and Ra, when you take that definition, you can apply that across all of your relationships. All of the relationships with inanimate objects. There is a proper use of this, and there is an improper use of this, right? This is Tov. Collect, collect, collect. This is raw catch. It just has to do with how it relates. It has to do with how it fits together. Now, here's what you have to understand. Humans, at least according to this story, are historically awful at deciding what's appropriate and what's inappropriate in relationships. It's as if God, knowing that, having created humans, decided it's just not the tree for you. Don't eat from that tree. And the day you eat of it, you're going to create a deathliness because of the improper relationships. This improper relationship will spin off into another improper relationship. Will spin off into another improper relationship. It's like this. If you throw trash in the river upstream, what happens downstream? It all goes that way. If you treat the river improperly, rah, upstream, it ruins it all the way downstream. That's the way this works. Humans were not given the created responsibility to choose right and wrong. I want you to back up into all the years of wonderful Sunday school classes and wonderful instruction. So much of how we instruct each other is right and wrong, right and wrong, right and wrong, right and wrong. But you want to know how we're optimally wired? You want to know how we are best made? Is never to choose right and wrong for ourselves. All of human history stands up in witness against us in this. We simply don't do it well. Because we always will choose what is tov, what's good, based on my limited experience. For me, to get rid of my trash is good. And there's a river with a current, and it flows that way. So if I throw my trash in the river, it's good for me because it goes away. It's tov for me. However, my neighbor downriver is experiencing my tovness. He's experiencing rawness. He has to deal with all the junk that I put downstream. And then he may decide for himself, well, you know what would be good is if I keep this going and we just keep sliding it down. We will always pick, even if we have a great heart, for that which benefits us over against the other. It's a part of that human condition, which is why, just don't eat from that tree. Because in the day you eat of it, you set in motion a trajectory of improper relating. It can be with stuff. It can certainly be with people. It can be with divinity. It can be with creation. That's how Tov and Ra works. We weren't given to eat from that tree, but we did. That's the way the story says it, but we did. And what happens? Well, God shows up and he looks at the serpent who was deceiving and he said, okay, there's a consequence for you. You're going to eat the very dust of the ground, crawl on your belly, but here's where it gets really poignant. He turns to the woman. He says, okay, because you've chosen to eat of the tree which you were instructed not to eat from, you've chosen for yourself, Tov, in Ra, here's the result. And he says, in toil or labor, you'll bring forth children. He turns to the man and he says, okay, because you've chosen to do this, to the tree that I did not give you instruction that this was appropriate for you. This is, you don't do this well, but because you've chosen to do that in toil or labor, you will work the ground that you came from. When you look behind the actual language, you see that the consequence for both her and him are the same. The Hebrew word is identical. In toil or in labor, you'll bring forth children, or your relationship with children will be toiling. And then in toil or labor, you're going to work the ground. That word for toil or labor is the Hebrew word etzib. It's identical to both of them. The result of choosing for yourself Tov and Ra is etzib. And here's what etzib means. Yes, it is a toiling, it's a laboring, but really when you get down to it, it's a pain. It's a deep pain. It's a dysfunctional, disoriented pain. It's a non-functioning pain. The result of choosing for oneself Tov and Ra is etzib. That's what the story teaches. We got serpents, we got trees, we got mythical gardens, and it's all beautiful and wonderful until pain enters in, struggle, this toiling that was not a part of original creation. How did it enter in? Well, the fire beings took it upon themselves to believe a lie. And they thought it good that they should be able to decide for themselves appropriate and inappropriate. And in so doing, the way the scriptures will teach through its whole 66 books, it was like striking a match on the dry tinder of an old forest. Striking the match is actually fairly easy. Setting it on the ground is extraordinarily easy. And if you've ever watched a fire get out of control, it's pretty awe-inspiring. I mean, that little tiny flame turns into an insatiable, ravaging, raging inferno, and it will burn and get hotter and consume everything in its path. That is the introduction. That right there, that storyline, is what we call the fall. It's when creation fell. Well, what did it fall from? Well, it fell from proper relationship. God with humanity, humanity with God, humanity with each other, and the earth with humanity and humanity with the earth. The earth now has its own way of rebelling against the natural order. Humans certainly have a way of infecting and influencing the earth that they're upon. And this relationship between God and humanity is now strained. In fact, the story shows that God then pushes them out of this garden of delight that he had placed them in, and he sets up a barrier between the two. Some would argue this is now your heaven-earth barrier. Nonetheless, this barrier is there, and they are now out in the open. He skins them in such a way that they are protected from the elements. It says he covers them. And there they are, now doomed, in a sense, to this fallen state. And it's as if all hope is lost. I mean, you could just see, if it was a movie score, I mean, the soundtrack is really dark. It's deep tones, and you've got the cinematography. It's all, the lighting is, it's dim. It's as if hope is gone. And what is God to do with the crown of his creation, his zelim, right, his etzib, that which he created to image him? What is he to do when that very image now images itself beyond God? It's as if they choose only themselves continually. In fact, we're going to read that in the storyline as we pick up speed. But right here is what you've got to catch. There's two trees. There's the tree of life. I want you to remember it, because when we get to Revelation in the spring, this image pops back up. There's a tree of knowledge of good and evil, and it's a tree that really we're not supposed to eat from, even now. It's a daily deathliness to us. If you decide for yourself, tov and ra, what's inappropriate and appropriate, and you have no guiding force for that, you have no creational reality for what would define a proper relationship, it's a deathliness. And what does it create? Well, according to the story, it creates etzib, pain, struggle. Take a step back, look around at the world that we live in, and you see, without much scouring, etzib. There's pain everywhere, deep internal real pain for people, deep pain, fractured relationships within families, fractured relationships within culture, fractured relationships between nations, a fracturing of relationship between the haves and the have-nots, fractured relationships all around with how we participate on the green-blue ball. What is polluting and what isn't? What is a deathliness for the future generations and what isn't? We have a tremendous problem that was set off like a single match in a garden long ago. That's the story. And it intersects you. You know how I know that? Because if we were to probe your little life, or you were to probe my little life, you would find that pain exists, deep pain, from our experiences or from the things that we witness others experience. Or we just see how things don't work the way that we want them to. We have great plans laid out, and we always wind up hurting someone else. It's pretty tragic, isn't it? I mean, this is a tragic story that we're a part of. You were born into etzib, pain, struggle, a toiling. Is there hope? Oh, but there is. There's actually a bookend to the book of Genesis as we go through, and we are going to hop, skip, and jump through it, because once you get through the creation narrative, which is where we are, we'll actually take it to Genesis 11, which takes us to the Tower of Babel, and I'm not going to let you miss out on the power of what happens there in Babylon. But from there, we're going to be introduced to Abraham. In fact, we mentioned his name last week in our picture story, because here's what happens. Abram and Sarah, they have no land, they have no children. What was the curse of their actions in Genesis 3? In toil, pain, your relationship with children will be. And in toil, pain, your relationship with land will be. Oh, by Genesis 12, God shows the hope that he has put in motion when he takes a landless man and a childless wife, and he dares to promise them land and children. The story isn't just for nursery rhymes. The story is extraordinarily potent. If you'll let the light flip on in your understanding, you'll catch truth beyond knowledge. That's my hope for this time. I want the lights of your being to come on, as if God, the one in creation, can step forward into your little chaotic sphere and say, light. And there's light. And in that space, split the chaotic waters of your life and create order, righteousness. And in that, God, through faith, will convince you in relationship, you don't have to decide tov and ra. I never gave it to you to do that. Relax. Follow life, and you will not walk in death. Right and wrong is not a human category. Oh, but we live in it, we thrive in it, we judge by it. When we get to Jesus in Matthew, what you're going to see is that every time they tried to trap Jesus in a right or wrong statement, he came out with this sort of sidelined, skirted, flanked maneuver, and he simply announced life. Is it this or this, Jesus? And Jesus would go, no. No, no, is it this or this, Jesus? Is it tov or ra? No. It is so that, boom, and he would announce life. And they'd walk away going, yeah, this guy doesn't play in the same categories that we do. I mean, even people that denounce Jesus as any sort of messianic figure, once they understand the culture he was in, they have to admit he was an extraordinary rabbi. Masterful. I mean, wisdom just dripping out of every pore, even if they denounce him as a Messiah. Once they understand what he did and how he thought, why? Because Jesus seems to have had a knack. He understood how to live from life and not death. And so can you. So we get to Abraham. Abraham has Isaac. Isaac has Jacob. Jacob then has these other sons. His sons have a warring issue. They tov and ra really improperly with each other. They don't choose life. In fact, they take their youngest, Joseph, and they throw him into a pit. And from that pit, he's then rescued by some Egyptian travelers who take him into Egypt. Years pass. Brother is assumed dead. There's a famine that strikes the land. This is the entire book of Genesis, by the way. It strikes the land. Jacob and his brothers are starving. His sons are starving in the promised area. And they must journey into Egypt, which has food. What they don't know is younger brother, who they treated with Ra, leaving him for dead. Younger brother has been made second in command of all of Egypt. They had no idea. And they show up begging for food. because they are dying. Their whole entourage of family, kids, grandkids, cousins, uncles, aunts, they all show up. Joseph knows them. They don't know Joseph. Joseph has a choice, life or death. Tov and Ra choice was easy. They screwed him over. He has the opportunity to do the exact same to them. But somewhere, deep down, Joseph chooses, eats from the other tree. He announces blessing to his family, primarily because of his dad. And he feeds them, and he equips them, and he lets them establish their livelihood yet again from the riches that he was able to acquire, even though they treated him with Ra. And the book of Genesis ends with this. It actually presents the hope that we think is lost in Genesis 3. Joseph says, I mean, he gets the last line. He gets to bring that conclusion where you're just like, oh, this is incredible. I hope you find time to read Genesis in one block, by the way. If you haven't done it yet, put it back in your to-do list. Write it down in your planner. Go sit down and read the 50 chapters of Genesis. Read it like the book it is. It's not just scripture that you memorize 1, 2, and 3 verses kind of erratically and then pull them out like a dictionary when you need to find something for your life. No, read the story. That's what's going to give you the richness of it. When Joseph sits there in the presence of his brothers, he makes a pronouncement, a faithful, life-filled pronouncement. He says, no, you don't understand. All that you intended for Ra, God has made Tov. What is God to do when his Zelim, his image, faithfully and inappropriately, consistently eats from the wrong tree? How is God to handle this? What God calls Tov, we'll call Ra. What God calls Ra, we'll call Tov. He's got a tremendous dilemma. Except for the fact that we forget he's the creator God. He's the wind that splits the chaotic waters. It's as if God goes, well, okay, that's how we're going to play it. You know what I'm going to do? Everything you intend for Ra, everything you produce in Ra, I will make Tov. That's what we're going to do. So all the created error that we will produce by scaling the wrong tree, the death tree, it produces this string of deathliness that just reverberates. It's why it's not unusual to have an alcoholic great-great-grandfather who had an alcoholic great-grandfather who had an alcoholic father who had an alcoholic. Why? Because sin, etzib, pain, reverberates. It's the match in the forest. It must have something to stop it. Otherwise, it will consume everything in its path because death is eroding. It just... Blah, 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 blah. But the key here is on Joseph's lips, the one treated poorly, the one treated to die. And he recognizes, no, from a tree of life reality, here's what you must know. All that was intended for Ra, God, has made Tov. Now, some of you who've been around the scriptures for a while ought to start having some bells go off. Now, wait a minute. There's a whole pattern here that actually happens. When you and I enter Christ, or more specifically, when Christ enters us, when Jesus, the life of God, sown in death and resurrected, when that life enters us, here are some of the directives. Paul says it most poignantly. He says, so, now, you rejoice in etzib. Rejoice in your trials, your tribulation, your struggles, your pain. Rejoice in it. Celebrate it. Why? Well, because pain, toil, struggle, etzib, produces perseverance, and perseverance produces proven character. And proven character produces hope. Our God has a tremendous capacity for flipping on its head anything that comes out of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. By humanity's choice to choose for itself good and evil, it unleashes a deathliness on the planet, so much so that everything has fallen from its place. Angels, operations, nature, the cosmos itself darkens until a day of hope. And here's the wisdom of God and the mystery of God is that God says, fine, we want to play with pain, do we? Then I will allow pain to produce in you the very hope that was lost in Genesis 3. So that you can rejoice in it. When you hit an area of pain, Paul says, celebrate it. Rejoice. Knowing that that pain, that etzib, produces in you something. It starts to go to work by God's design now. It'll produce in you perseverance, proven character, and hope. And then here's what it says in hope. Hope does not disappoint because the love of God has been poured out within our hearts through the Holy Spirit who was given to us. That little power-packed phrase of Revelation should become clearer and clearer, more light and more light in the weeks we have together. In fact, that's my prayer for you and me. Jesus says it this way, taking upon him the understanding that humanity's deepest fallible moment is this daily interaction with the wrong tree. But the choice to choose to eat from the tree of life is always before us. But Jesus says this, he says, in this world, you're going to have tribulation. I want you to think etzib, pain, struggle, toil. In this world, you'll have tribulation. You're not getting out of it. And he says this, but take heart. I have overcome the world. To be an overcomer, to be an overcomer. I want you to remember that phrase in the spring. It's tethered to this storyline right here in Genesis 3. You and I are now called by God's design in the midst of a world with etzib, pain and struggle, resulting from our desire, our need, our insatiable capacity to want to keep eating from the wrong tree and getting the same result, death. Deathliness. We cycle. That's why you can read history and then watch history repeat itself. It's just a tree in a seed. It just simply repeats kind after kind. The only thing that disrupts it is when someone is bold enough by faith to start living by the life of another. You start living by the life of Jesus for the purpose of life abundant. But I don't want you to be confused. It doesn't mean you'll have a pain-free life. It just means that God will take the pain in your life and he redeems it. He, all that was intended for Ra, God makes good. And God will make all things good for those called according to his purpose. You know this. You've heard it. Now, by the grace of God, may you begin to live it in a new way. So, Father, take your word, plant it deep within us, and let it sprout in Jesus' name. Amen.
So many questions in my head, it's like a carousel spinning. Just when I think I'm at the end, I find I'm at the beginning. Well, if I had the chance to ask him, would I even know where to start? Yeah. Would I ask them chronologically right from the creation? Would I start with the finale, the book of Revelation? Maybe I should stop my thinking, let the questions flow.